Remember the first time you saw a race car on an open trailer? Maybe it was full of dirt, tire marks, and other battle scars. You wondered where it had been, and more importantly, where it was going next. Every open trailer has a story, and we're here to tell it. Welcome to the Open Trailer Podcast. And for the final act in our Steve Perry trilogy, it's stage 3 of Perry on Open Trailer Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Austin. Thank you for joining the show. This time out, well, Steve talks about the other things that he's gotten into, not only LST Motorsport Park, but remember the time he bought the Augusta show? Maybe it's always been Steve Perry's Augusta show for you, but that had a rich history long before he came along. And I think you're going to be interested to hear who had a very instrumental role in Steve buying the Motorsports Expo from Tim Ataya. Steve also gets back into car ownership, which turns out was a horrible mistake. Seems to be a common theme in these things. But how low did it get? How much money did Steve Perry lose on this race team? And some of the friendships, too, that, you know, Steve's known for having a lot of friendships throughout racing, but you will lose a few, or at least have a few impacted when you do as many things as he's done. So this one cuts right to the core on the rebuilding of Steve Perry, too. Steve, you know, he was torn down emotionally, financially, in a lot of different ways. And you'll hear about the specifics of each within this podcast. This has been completely mind-blowing, and I'm really glad that he, like all of our guests, are just completely wide open. You know, they come in here, and I don't know what it's like to not be interviewed or be part of the interview process, because it's kind of what I do. I do realize that it's out of the comfort zone for a lot of people. But man, by the time we settle in 15, 20 minutes, each and every guest has been so forthright, and it makes for great content. So this week, certainly no surprise. So in the past week or so, actually, this is something that's been going on behind the scenes for a couple of months, but finally able to announce it. You probably heard it on Black Flag Podcast earlier this week that Black Flag and Open Trailer are coming together for the first live event of its kind for podcasting in the state of Maine. It's the off-season invocation, and it's happening at Eric's Church on February the 8th. That's a Thursday night. Black Flag will be doing their show live. There'll be some open trailer trivia. We're getting together, trying to get the racing community together to hang out in the off-season. Think of it as, well, speaking of the Motorsports Expo, think of it as a Roosters night. Remember when you'd hang out at Roosters or Ground Round? Epic times, right? So for a few years, I've wanted to put together something for the off season, and whether it was through Maine Vintage Race Car Association or this, you know, I'm really glad that this has come together. Black Flag are definitely the people to be the main host for this. What they do is epic, and they'll certainly bring the party. And everyone's invited too. Whether you're a fan of this podcast, their podcast, both. Hopefully, you are a fan of both. You know, you can definitely find yourself entertained. Again, on Thursday night, it's a free event, by the way, 18 plus, Eric's Church, good times and bad dancing on Route 302 in Windham. So first of its kind, off-season party, the off-season invocation. And the invocation comes from the fact that we're doing it at Eric's Church. Now, if you're listening outside of the state of Maine or you've never heard of Eric's Church, no, Eric Church will not make an appearance or is in a bar that Eric Church owns. This is Eric's, Eric with a K, Eric's Church. And there's a cool family tie-in with the naming of it and everything. Kenny Chinkett and all the crew over there, absolutely awesome. You're going to have the fun time, best cheese curds in the world. And yeah, come on out. February 8th, again, Thursday night. It is the off-season invocation, Black Flag Podcast and Open Trailer Podcast getting together for one hell of a party. Oh, and so before we move forward, Patreon.com/Open Trailer Podcast. Thank you so much for the support. If you are a Patreon supporter, you have the VIP treatment for February 8th, by the way. So I'll be in touch with you over the course of the next couple of weeks on what that means and how you can do that. So if you want to be a VIP for the event, great time to be on Patreon. So Patreon.com/Open Trailer Podcast. All Patreon members will be on the VIP list. So let's get to it. Stage 3 of Steve Perry on this week's show. really just seem calm, more calm than I think you've been in the time that I've known you. You're still doing all your crazy things, but would you be where you are today without Debbie in your life?
No, not, nope, not even close.
Yeah.
It's like I said, we joke about it with my friends, and they'd be the first to tell you, like, I have a very wild side to me, but I also know when that comes out, you know. I have a very important, I consider important role at the company I work for. Mm-hmm. You know, being a president of LST Landscaping, I take that serious. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We have some major
projects,
some major customers. So I take that it's a very important role. Mm-hmm. LST Motorsports Park, you know, mainly karting. There's kids that look up to me, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have a side that, you know, I in the past I've been tendency to be out there, and, you know, we joke around it around the campfire at the tracks, and, you know, people know if we were amongst friends, some of the things that I've done in the past, or, you know, talk about, people will be like, there ain't no way. And then I'll have friends like Greg Emerson or Scott Poulin, or somebody will say, no, pal, you don't understand.
Yeah.
This happened.
Yeah.
This really happened. Louis, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, they'll say, no, this guy's nuts.
One of the other things that happened in your life, too, is the Racing Preview and eventually the Augusta Civic Center show. How do these come into your world?
So it's funny. Mainly motorsports. The dumbest thing that ever happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
Also the best thing that ever happened to me. You know what I mean? So it's weird.
Yeah.
You know, it brought Debbie, you know. Tim Attia started the Northeast Motorsports Expo 35 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to have him on mainly motorsports. He'd give me a free booth space at the show in turn for him coming on the show and promoting his Augusta show. So 1 year, you know, same thing with Marco. He'd give me, you know, booth space in Portland to have him on the show. So I'm setting up in Portland 1 year, and Tim Attia comes in on a Friday morning. Says, hey, how you doing, Steve? Oh, good, Tim. How you doing? Good. He says, thinking about getting rid of the show.
This is the Portland show.
The Augusta show.
Okay, because I thought Augusta came first.
Yeah, but it had already happened. It just happened.
All right.
So this is February. He says, I'm thinking about getting rid of the Augusta show. Would you be interested? I said, geez, yeah, I really would be.
And again, what does a show come with? The same thing as the TV show.
Yeah,
the contacts.
The date. That one would come with the date.
The infrastructure.
You know, same thing. The, mm-hmm. Augusta's not going to let somebody else come in to do the same type of thing.
Yeah.
So the one thing that one carried that the other one didn't is, you know, he had some reputable sponsors, you know, EJP.
And relationships.
Mm-hmm. So he says to me, wife got some back issues. He says, I went and sat down with Peter Prescott after the show last month and let him know that next year was going to be my last one. And both Doug White and Bill Ryan have expressed interest in buying the show and wanted to know what Peter's opinion was. And Peter said, well, you can do whatever you want, your show, but I don't think either one of them would have the best interest of that show and the people in their mind.
Hmm.
I think you got to go find the guy that owns that TV show and talk him into trying to buy it. He goes, I don't know him, but he's all about everything and everybody.
Hmm.
So Peter Prescott didn't even know me, but recommended me to buy that show and take it over from Tim.
That's quite the endorsement.
Yeah, for a guy not knowing, but knew what I was about.
He was a viewer.
So, yeah, view it, watched it, you know. Yeah. So
as a result of your worst decision, you have this new empire of TV shows.
I have the Augusta show. You know what I mean? And then, like I said, mainly motorsports is, you know, and it towards the end of it, you know, I lost some of my luster,
mm-hmm.
you know.
You got burnt out.
You get burned out, you know.
I don't think you're as burnt out today as you were, say, 10 years ago.
Yeah, no. And, yeah. You know, obviously the go-kart track is brought a little back. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd been through a few things with, you know, the other racing and just, you know, it's just, it's hard because other people's interest, you know, are able to do other things and you're stuck every week coming around and doing this TV show. And then, you know, you feel like you're going down the same path over and over and over. But like I said, I wouldn't trade any of it because the friendships, the doors it opened up, you know, some of the highlights and they seem so stupid, Andy, but I'll never forget walking through Summerfest one day in the early stages and walking by and there's Rick Zembla and Bob Randall having a conversation. They come from this the era where they're untouchable to me. Rick Zembla had 2 years of the most dominating years that I ever witnessed sitting in the grandstands at Beechridge. So he's on a pedestal.
Yep.
Okay. Bob Randall. I remember watching him win that ACT race.
Yeah. That was a moment.
Right. Mm-hmm. Wow. He's untouchable. I don't even, I mean, I know who he is, but I never spoke to him.
Same feeling. Yeah.
So I'm walking by, right? Within 5 feet of him. Rick Zembla says, Steve.
Yeah.
Is there another
Steve? Who, me?
Rick
yeah.
Zembla.
Yeah, yeah.
Pleased to meet you.
Yeah.
And Bob Randall says, Bob Randall. He says, hey, love watching your show. You do a great job. Really appreciate
wow.
it.
Wow.
Thank you
yeah.
for everything you do. I'm like, oh, my word. Those guys know who I am. I'm like, literally, you know what I mean? Those are guys that, you know, they wouldn't know who I was if it wasn't for that. You know? So, I mean, so different things like that.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Just so the show has done so much. Other than the financial part of it, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, no, it definitely paid in sweat equity. You know, you talk about earning the respect of, you know, guys like Zembla and Randall and the countless others, the Dions and everything. You know, there was a point at Beechridge about a dozen years ago where you were just emasculated in front of your peers. That infamous pit meeting.
The pit meeting.
Yeah. Can you take us through the emotions of what even brought that meeting on? I know they had a driver's meeting, and I went to go check it out because I wanted to know if there were certain rules that I needed to follow that night as a race announcer, and I get there, and he's just ripping you a new ass.
Yeah, and I wasn't even at it.
Oh, you weren't even there.
No, so I wasn't even there. So okay. I was at the track, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
So I'm at the track, you know?
Mm.
It's championship night, so he's having this meeting. Right, and that's the night where he goes, gets all the $5 bills, gives Dave Turner the bucket, and tells him every time he says the F word, he's going to give him a $5 bill. Right, and this is Andy Cusack we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm standing down below, and I'm talking to Jimmy Emerson. We're talking about the go kart races over at the Saco Pathfinders, right? So Alicia's there with me. So we're just talking about the go-kart races.
And she's 12 probably at this point, right?
Yeah, 13. 12, 13 or something. So we're just standing there talking. First person to walk by is Mike Maeda Jr. So I said, hey, you know, how'd that go? Anything good? He says, oh, you don't even want to know. So then Greg Emerson goes by.
Yeah.
He's my co-host of the TV show at the time.
Yeah, yeah. You definitely had the platform as the TV host.
Yeah. So I'm like, hey, how was that? Anything we can talk about this week on the show? He goes, oh. Like,
yeah, no one's telling you anything.
I'm like, what the heck? Dan Walker's friend Jimmy that used to drive the golf cart around, he passed away, right?
Yeah.
So he's waiting on the golf cart for Andy Cusack.
Hmm.
So Andy's coming down. So I says to Andy, hey, good luck with the program tonight.
Yeah, you know,
championship night, just like I would with any promoter. He walks by the golf cart, you know, comes to the other side. He's got his little papers with him or whatever. He says, hey, just so before you hear it from anybody else, he says, I called you out at my driver's meeting of what I think about you and your show. Nothing personal, but I think your show's a joke. He says, all you do is talk about yourself. You don't do anything for the sport. You don't talk about any drivers. You don't have drivers on your show. Like, literally. Like, I was dumbfounded.
Yeah, it's a driver's meeting.
It took me a few seconds because
right.
when he started to come talk to me, I thought he was going to apologize to me for not getting back to me because I had reached out to him a week or so earlier because I was doing a program where I was giving away $1,000 to a fan that was willing to go to 3 races in a weekend.
That's right.
One was Friday night at Oxford, one was Sunday at Unity, and one was Saturday night. And I wanted to make Saturday's Beechridge. So you had to go to those 3 tracks and bring your ticket from Friday and Saturday to Unity. The only stipulation was I wanted to present the trophies at those 3 tracks. Nice trophies. So it was costing me money.
Right.
And Andy never got back to me.
Yeah. But so the other 2 tracks did.
The other 2 tracks. Yeah. We gave away trophies at Oxford. We gave away at Unity. And then we made Saturday night at any track because Andy never got back. So I thought he was, so it took me a few seconds. So he literally, you know, he's telling me that, you know, all this. So my kid's watching me get basically told I'm a piece of shit. So that hurt more than anything. But at that point, that one of the first times in my life, I felt low, you know, I'm like, and I think and not that you would expect this, but like you said, there, a lot of my friends are up there. And a lot of my peers, and not one defended you or said, wait a minute, Andy, I've been on that show.
Yeah.
Or, you know, anything. No, and like I said, that's where the respect from fear, like it goes back to you saying the mafia, you know? I mean, that it was, so I was like, okay, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, Andy, give me some pointers. You know, tell me what I could do to make it better.
Yeah.
You know, let's have a meeting. He goes, oh, I don't do meetings. I said, I look around his shoulder. I go, you just had one. He goes, all right, well, let me get through this week and then send me an email and we'll get together.
Yeah.
So I said, okay. So I'm like, I don't even know what to say because other people watched him all. If you weren't sitting up there to hear it, you just watched him pacing and say it to me again.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So my kid says, you all right, Dad? I'm like, yeah, I'm good. So now I don't even know where
to go. She picks up on it.
I don't even know where to go because what if I go somewhere and nobody wants to talk to me because, you know, oh, geez, I can't talk to him now. You know, I know what Andy thinks of him now.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So now I don't even know what to do. I don't even know what to do right now. For the first time in my life, I think I'm thinking about leaving and going home. Like, I don't even know what to do.
Yeah.
So, first persons I come in contact with was Todd and Evan Bullia. So, I'm walking down, and Todd Bullia says, don't even listen to what he said. I'm like, oh, yeah. He says, he is stupid. He don't even know what he's talking about. So, you know, kind of makes you feel good that, you know, he brings it up. I don't bring it up, right? So a few other people talk about it throughout the night, but I try to avoid as many people as I can. I don't go looking to have a conversation.
Yeah.
Probably the highlight of my night. I go out to Happy Half Hour to congratulate the champions and things like that. Dave Turner, nicest guy, right?
Yeah.
So he's out there at the front and just out there with his car. And some lady comes over and she wants to take his picture. So he's standing there next to his car, and the lady, I don't know who she was. I don't think he knew who she was, and I don't even know if she knew who I was because I was standing far enough back that I wasn't around. And she's wanting to take his picture next to his car, and she says to him, well, wait, can you move over? I want to have, or it says Mainly Motorsports. I love that show. I'm like,
yeah.
Unreal. Like, where's he coming from with this?
Yeah, that's a good shot right there.
But it's funny. Because I've been telling people for years that Andy had a problem with me. Like, and they're like, no. I said, I'm telling you. I don't know what it is. He's got a problem with me.
Because your history dates back, you know, to the 80s.
Yeah.
From when you drove, from when you were on Billiter's crew, you know, throughout the Super Sportsman. You know, it's not like it started with the TV show. Or do you feel that it started with the TV show?
I don't know. It had to have. Because, I mean, I did nothing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And, you know, obviously there's something. And, I mean, from things like, and you know, you were the announcer there, you know? you know, you would, on Thursday Thunder, guys would sponsor, you know, the legends or whoever, and you'd bring them up in the booth and they would get to talk, right? Steve Perry has his night where he goes to sponsor and, hey, I want to, we can't do that. There's no time to have him up there. Mike Rowe goes to Andy. I want to have a sponsor night. I'm going to sponsor a night.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, yeah. No, whatever you need, Mike, let me know. Yeah, I'll sponsor, and then, but I want to get Steve Perry involved, and I want him to do like he does at Wiscasset. They have a fun night up there. Oh, I don't think we got any nights left. You know what I mean? Like,
there was one night that was sponsored, and it was Dayton Sand and Gravel.
Yeah.
That was it.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah. Or maybe like the Miller Lite.
You know, I offered free trophies the night that the Granite State Pro Stock Series was coming to Beechridge for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, every night, and it was COVID, so he was allowed, what, 50 fans, 100 fans, whatever the amount of fans
250.
Was, right? You know, at that time. So obviously, the COVID year is not a big money-making year for any racetrack. I send an email. Hey, Andy, you know, blah, blah, blah. I've been a tough year for you. You know, this, that, and the other. Really like to, you know, help you out any way I could, you know, this night. It's a big night. You know, introducing Granite State Beechridge for the first time. I'd love to, you know, give you the trophies, you know, for that night, for all your divisions, kind of help you out. It's a cost that you won't have to, you know, take that night, give you some extra nice trophies for those classes, your classes, mm-hmm. incorporate your sponsors or any sponsors you need on them. You know, I don't need my stuff on them. Just try to help you out with a little bit of extra, you know, income for yourself. Can't even get an email back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was a tough relationship all around, you know, and I know that I lived it with you, so I can understand that. Even at the time, I mean, it was completely uncalled for.
Yeah.
And what made me feel was what you just said is it isn't necessarily what you said about you. It's what was said in front of your daughter. You know, because at the end of the day, you're a dad and, you know, you're a hero to that young lady. And that young lady saw her dad emasculated in front of his peers. And that's just completely uncalled for. But, the track eventually does come to a close. 2021, crazy night that I believe you were a part of as well. What were your memories of that night?
It's so funny. 10 years earlier. And I wish Louis had touched on it when he said, I had told these people, I told everybody they would listen. Nobody will ever own it after Andy because he'll never take a chance that somebody could do a better job. And it isn't about doing a better job. That's where you have to
let it go. To anybody else, right.
Yeah, that's where you got to let it go. It isn't a better job. It's a different job. It's a different avenue. It's a different, you know what I mean? But then when he combined all the classes on the one night and the kids were now allowed in the pits, I said to people,
yeah,
this is checkout year.
Yeah.
This is the checkout year. You know, did I believe it? Part of me did, but I didn't. You know what I mean? It's like, no. But, you know, it was like,
I think they were just, you know, like I said, like we said on the Louis podcast, I mean, that place is just, you know, littered with red flags in 2020 vision. No one really believed it at the time, but you look back on it and it wasn't just that year, it wasn't the COVID year. You can go back to 2015, 2014, and, you know, little pieces that weren't as paid attention to as closely as others.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, I know as long as social media is alive, that place will be alive. You know, the weeds will be growing through the cracks, and, you know, there's people that are, you know, and I don't know. I don't know what could have been ever done different. I mean, nothing. I mean,
I spoke to someone who will remain nameless just recently about the chances of any of that happening. Even let's just take the ownership. Let's take all the real estate out of it. The idea that Beech Ridge could be a functioning speedway. Yes, with the money. Yes, with the time. But we don't have a Marcus Smith and Dale Earnhardt Jr. And that's what it took for Wilkesboro. And we're also not going to have COVID money, which is really kind of what was driving the Wilkesboro ship, for those that forgot. 1 year ago, the answer from this entity would have been, yes, we can make a run at it. But it's been so deteriorated within the last calendar year that it's made it almost uninhabitable. And just 1 year did that.
Yeah, it doesn't take long.
So, I mean, people can talk all they want. Pfft, not going to happen.
Yep.
Yeah, I hate to say it. But about that night, anyway, what were your memories of that?
Well,
that
it was just
evening?
Just the way it went down, and it was just all of it, you know, and watching people that, you know, I think people overreacted. It was a racetrack. Mm. You know what I mean? That closed.
Yep.
Plain and simple. Find a new home. And other people have.
Yeah.
You have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's not a new home. It's not a new home.
Well, no, but you
it's
found
a new place of employment.
Yeah, you found a place to go.
Mm-hmm.
But life went on, yeah. You know, and, you know, I think some, I mean, yeah, we grew up there, conceived there, or whatever the hell happened there. You know?
Buzzy you know, and his flashlight.
You know what I mean? But yeah. It's just, it's, you know, it's over. His master plan was to make happen, and it happened. You know, I know it's not what people want to hear or see or read or, you know.
It's done. D-U-N. But you're not done. I mean, you got LST. What are your plans for the next 5 years?
I don't know. Obviously, you know, continue the growth. And, you know, I get excited. You know, I was at the main vintage banquet this last weekend. And it just seemed like yesterday I was watching Max Cookson trying to win, you know, a little go-kart race at 10 years old. And now I'm watching him, you know, win championships, win races. And, you know, looking forward to the kids that were, you know, helping get ready to advance up the ladder. And, you know, the second go round with Mike Rowe, it broke me. You know, it literally, on a financial side of things, personal side of things, everything, it really, you know, it took the wind right out of my sails and everything. And to rebuild from that, that was probably the toughest thing to do with any part of any racing, any racks, any change of drivers, anything, you know, worse than, you know, the money I spent in mainly motorsports, the money I lost in mainly motorsports, you know.
How much money do you think you've lost in racing over the years?
Oh. I wouldn't even, you know, I don't even know. I mean.
$200,000?
Oh, I don't even know if it goes that far. Well, I will tell you this. So back in 2014, you know, this is the second dumbest thing I ever did in racing, was to go back super late model racing on the past tour.
Yeah.
And it was nobody's fault but my own, you know.
Was it ego?
100%.
Yeah.
Because when you have that fix in racing, you know, it's probably like, you know, I've never done drugs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't really drink, so I don't know the fix that you always hear about that.
You're mentally consumed with it.
Yeah, but you're always waiting for that next big,
yeah.
You know, that win. And then when you're on that level, you know, the next one could be a big win. You know, the Oxford 250 or
the Pass 400.
You know, a big win, yeah. You know. So, you know, when we went back in 2014, you know, my personal life wasn't at its best, my doing, you know, 100% me, you know, and, you know, at the time, Mike Lux, one of my best friends, you know, I was running the gravel pit that I worked at was Scott Poole, and I was now leasing. So, you know, I had monthly payments, monthly bills. I went back with Mike. Mike Lux had called and he said, I'm building a car for Mike. You want to help me out?
Mm-hmm.
What I should have said was, yeah, you know, I'll buy you some tires, buy you some gas.
But not you.
Nope,
nope.
Not me.
No.
This is where the ego came in. Well, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to run the deal. And I'll spend some money and I'll run the deal and we'll go racing.
Yep.
So Mike Lux said, yeah, okay, do whatever. So we go to Jeff Taylor's and, you know, he spent the majority of the money to get the program off the ground. I spent, you know, a few thousand dollars to order a car and, you know, he spent. And So we get the program off the ground. Ka shows up and, you know, still needs a lot of stuff. So we got to hire a crew chief. So he had people in mind. I had people in mind. We went my direction. We went with Mark. So we got my shop and we redid the shop over in Saco out of my gravel pit. And so it was, I'm spending money. Money I shouldn't have been spending. Should have been focused on the gravel pit. But I was focused on the racing, you know. I got to do what's right. And I don't want to fail. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be the guy that called Mike Rowe and said, hey, I don't have money to go racing this weekend.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm robbing Peter to pay Paul. I'm not paying bills to go racing. I'm, you know, we need tires. We need this. We need that. And I'm doing it. So we end up, we run all year. And I start getting ready for the next year. And I'm doing the same thing. And I'm like, I can't do it no more. I finally at a point where Scott's taking the gravel pit back over. I got a broken dump truck. I'm getting ready to go through a divorce. Oh, probably $50,000-$60,000 in between household expenses, pit expenses, just things ain't good. You know, life isn't good. And so I'm like, I can't do this anymore. So I tell Mike Locks, I said, listen, if we're doing this next year, you're going to have to spend money. He spent initial investment on the car,
right. But
then I spent money to finish the car, and I spent a lot of money to race all summer. So wasn't a lot of conversation going on. It was just like, well, we'll sit tight and this, that, and the other. So I'm working one night doing some plowing. Guy stops by, one of our sponsors, and tells me that, pretty excited to hear that Mike Rowe is going to be driving for Peter Pettit the next year, that Lux and Pettit are teaming up.
Oh.
So I play dumb. I'm like, really?
Well, you didn't know, so you weren't playing dumb, were you?
No, I played dumb.
Okay.
I didn't know, but I didn't go confrontational either. I'm what are you talking about?
You
know what I mean? So I immediately call Mike Rowe, and I said, hey, I just heard this. So Mike, you know, honest, he ain't gonna lie to me.
Yeah.
He says, you know what's funny? Benji said something about that the other day he heard. I'll call Lux tomorrow and I'll call you. He calls me the next day. He says, we're gonna have to have a meeting. He says, I don't know what's going on. I said, all right, no problem. So now I'm thinking, what is going on? I've spent a lot of money. I've been spending money during the off season, getting the car ready.
That you don't have.
That I don't have. I literally don't have. I am in the worst financial shape of my life. I have a dump truck that's broke, so I can't even work. It just, things are the worst financial shape of my life.
But you're still going racing.
Thinking I'm going, but I realize
but the
now.
The intention is.
But finally I realize now I ain't going racing. I am in bad shape.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, getting ready to go through a divorce, you know what I mean? Just things ain't good. So the next day, Mike Rowe doesn't call. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? So I drive over to the shop, which I don't even have the pit no more because I've had to give that back because I can't even afford to pay for it. I'm behind so much on the bills there.
Mm-hmm.
So I come out of there. I'm driving down the road, and I'm like, geez, a lot of cars at the pit that's not really
I don't recognize those.
Anything going on. Yeah, Scott should be around, you know, because he's taking the pit back over. So as I get closer, I'm like, geez, that's Mike Rowe's truck and Mike Lux's truck and Larry's truck and Mark's car. What's going on? So I drive over and my dump truck driver's over there working on a truck trying to get that fixed. And I stop and see him for a minute. So then I drive up to the garage and it's Mike Rowe comes out. He says, Perry, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what's going on. I said, why? What's up? He says, yeah, Mike Lux isn't. He says, if we're racing, he's racing with Peter Pettit, not doing anything with you. I said, are you serious? He says, yeah, I don't know what's wrong. I don't know where this came from. I have no idea. So we go inside, and I'm looking at him, and I'm like, what's going on? He says, no, not doing it. I'm going racing with Peter Pettit. Mike, we're going racing, and that's the way it's going to be. I said, well, what about all the money I spent? I mean, I spent over, not counting tires, fuel, and going to the racetrack, I spent $70,000 that I shouldn't have, putting into the car and getting everything ready now. We've powder coated. I've bought a new body. I've bought this. I've bought that to get ready. I've paid Mark all winter that, you know, what about that?
Yeah.
You'll get taken care of. Wow.
Yeah. Thanks.
So we had a friendship. Like, this was a friendship. I mean, I went to basketball games with him and his daughter. I sat on the sidewalk at the Civic Center from midnight till 9 in the morning till they started selling tickets. So we were the first one in line to be the ones to get the tickets that we wanted. I mean, just so much, you know. You know, everything. All gone. Right there. Like, gone. Like,
betrayal.
I'm like, wow. Like, everything at my lowest. So I walk out. I have nothing. You know, the race car, what are you going to do? You fight for it? I mean, I got a stack of slips, all this stuff, you know. Like, what do I do? You know? You know, it ain't Mike Rowe's problem. Mike Rowe's got a decision to make. He wants to race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can walk away from that. And if he's going to race, he's going to have to spend a whole boatload of money to go racing.
Right.
Or he can go that route. So it was just like, you want to talk about, if you know, the Andy thing had me low, but that was just Andy and his opinion. You know, with, you know, by the end of the night, that was gone. You know what I mean? That was, you know, when that lady said, can you move over so I can have you in the picture? And other people, as I was walking around that night,
yeah.
But that day when, you know, all the money I had spent, the 8 years of true friendship, probably more than that, you know what I mean? Gone. And that was low.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I remember going back to my studio over at the
Saco Island, yeah.
Yep. And just kind of sitting there and going through stuff and looking at my financials,
yeah.
You know, and thinking about where I was as a person, you know, mainly motorsports, you know, and all of it. And that wasn't making no money, and the pit and where I had put that in jeopardy, and I'd lost it, you know, basically, you know, I didn't lose it. I gave it back to him, still owed him a bunch of money because I'd fallen behind in bills, personal life, you know, like, I'm like, wow, this is, you know, and I looked at thing, and I started adding up and the numbers that I owed, and it was at that point, Andy, I'm like, you could either like feel sorry for yourself and you're like, you know, like, oh, well, you know,
it's a fight or flight,
or you dig your heels in.
Yeah.
And I remember I go to my three bank accounts and I'm like, all right, it's like $7 or $5 or something. I had like $12 in my pocket, you know?
Mm.
And I'm like, we got to dig our heels in, you know?
And how old are you at this point?
Well, this was 2014.
All right, so you're in your
40s. 2015. February of 2015.
Yeah.
So what's
starting
that?
Starting over.
Literally.
Yeah. You were born in 66, 49 years old.
The brokest I've ever been in my life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Got a wife that we're now separated, going to go through a divorce. Got two kids that are high teen, you know, mid teens, but I'm still responsible, you know, I'm still kind of responsible because it was my decision to, you know, to end the marriage. Yeah,
Your decisions got you into the place that you're in.
Yeah. And I'm the one thing that I'll tell anybody, and anybody that knows me, I'm an accountable person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't blame anybody else for my bad doings or my wrong decisions. So the whole thing with the racing thing and spending that money, nobody held a gun to my head. Nobody twisted my arm. Nobody said anything. It was my decisions to do it. Mm-hmm. My ego, my this. So there I am in the spring of 2015, you know, broke. When I say broke.
Broke.
Living in that studio on my sofa couch.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've been there.
Like, you've been there.
Yeah.
Sleeping on a sofa couch. Like nothing, with nothing. But nobody knew it. Like, nobody knew it.
Yeah.
And it's like, dig your heels in. And
how'd you dig yourself out?
So I had been plowing for the LST. I had plowed for that winter a little bit, and I got more involved with them and ended up doing more the next year with them. But the one thing that I always made sure I never did was burn a bridge.
Hmm.
And people that I had done work with at the gravel pit and had bought material off me and done things with, you know, I'd always been fair with. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I did to try to raise money to go racing was pre-sell material at a discounted rate to get people to give me money. It was like a drug fix.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, I'll sell you this material at a discount. You know, you want to buy it ahead of time because I needed money to go racing. So they would buy the sand.
Yeah, yeah.
And then come get it when they needed it. So there was a guy by the name of AJ Levesque. He was Andy Luce's, Glenn Luce's major sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
Good guy. Great guy. He pre-bought a bunch of sand. He didn't use it all up. And by the time I had left the pit, I had said to him, listen, you still got 40 yards of credit. When you need it, call me. I'll come deliver it to you, you know, free of charge. You know, you still, he said, no, it's my fault not needing it. So came a time when he needed it and he couldn't get his trucks around in the area. And I said, listen, I'll bring it to you. He goes, I'll pay you. I go, no. The honorable thing, you were always a good customer and stuff. So
mm-hmm.
he was digging a test hole to see about a perk test to be able to put a house on a foundation in this area. So I deliver him a few loads. He gets the permit and everything. He calls me up a week later and asks me if I can deliver him like 1,400 yards. But because I've never burned a bridge and always done the right things, I end up getting a 1,400. So, you know what I mean? It started the steamroll effect. And by the end of that summer, I had bought three trucks. I was back rolling. But the biggest thing was, you know, getting with Debbie and having her always, like, anytime I would question and, you know, like I said, turn around and she's with me. She's always there.
Yeah.
Like, you can do this. And you know, and I have the desire and the drive and anything, you know what I mean? There's no quit. And then, you know, my gig with LST, I mean, them guys are great. And it's so funny is because I remember going to Beech Ridge years ago in the old modifieds and the Cusack and the Homer and the Walson Humes and all those guys running up front, Ray mm-hmm. Leach, Jim McClaw.
Yep.
But the two names I always think about was always Randy Weimert and Dave Klukey.
Dave Klukey, yeah.
Always those two, you know, just out there being a part of the field and out there racing.
Yep.
And now I'm with those guys and get to see Randy Weimert every day. And I was a part of when they bought a modified for Randy and let him run the MRS race
mm-hmm.
at Beech Ridge a few years ago.
Yep.
And when I look back at my racing career and the days, and you look at the highlights and obviously winning the 250 with Mike and some other things,
mm-hmm.
but the night that I went racing with Randy at Beech Ridge, and it was his last race, and he finished his career where he started it at Beech Ridge in a modified,
yep.
and looking at his wife sitting there, and remember back in the 70s when everybody had those big buttons with the...
Yep.
And she still had her button and she still had her Randy Weimert 66 shirt on and stuff. Those are the things that the memories aren't... And I always say this all the time. A great night at the racetrack doesn't necessarily have to end up in victory lane. And to me, that was a great night at the racetrack.
Sweat equity. Right, it's the memories you make, which is a good way to, I think, put a lid on you know what we're talking about. I mean, it's full circle. You know, we started off talking about how you know, with go-karts and everything, you know, the opportunity you're allowing these young racers to experience their lifelong memories. I talked about it on the PA when I was up there a couple weeks ago, and that was fun. But yeah, you know, same idea here. You know, where you get to wrap up your most proud moments are with you know, that family and it's being a part of, you know, so Steve, an incredible story all around. You know, we could really probably go on. We're close to 3 hours.
Jeez, sorry.
No. It's been great. We got plenty of stuff for this, but I want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to make all this happen. It's been wonderful. Any parting words?
No, it's been, you know, honestly, met so many great people. You know, I sound like Mike Maeda now. You know what I mean? The wonderful people.
But he's right.
No, and like I said, I have been fortunate enough with the people that helped me, you know, with the TV show. And, you know, Louie and Brick, you know, we joke about them. And you call them the court jesters and all that. But from the early years of mainly motorsports to, you know, the go-kart track and the off-season shows with Augusta and Portland and anything.
Trophies.
Trophies. Anything we do with, you know, anything. And they're always right there for us, and to help out. And, you know, so many people behind the scenes that don't get enough credit for in anything, at any racetrack or race team. And, you know, and that's what we're all doing is we're making memories.
Yep.
You know, because at the end of the day, the check's gone. You know, the trophies might be on the shelf, but it's the memories.
Again, I want to thank Steve for all of his stories. Steve is one hell of a storyteller, and even though they were the longest episodes that we've ever done, they went by quick. So we go from Steve to someone who has some history with Steve. Now, in Stage, I can't remember whether it was one or two, we talked about Steve buying into mainly motorsports, a show that at the time was hosted by another icon, Mark Thomas. Marco has some stories.
Back in the day, Cornish was well known as the biggest town in Maine without a police department.
Mm-hmm.
And we were about a mile down the road from Mason's, which was an agency liquor store. And, you know, the tool guys and, you know, all the other jobbers and stuff would stop by and a bunch of customers. And, you know, they'd usually be 12, 15, 18 people all hanging around having a good old time on Wednesdays.
Who's there, just to kind of name drop a little bit?
Next time out, Open Trailer Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Austin. Thank you for the support.